Live in El Patio, Rockies opening day. Sun is shining. People are partying. You should be a part of this down here at El Patio. We're here till 2. Then Zach and Phil will take over, and they'll get you through the game till 6. And we got Andrew Mason stopping by. He is live with us on the couch here at El Patio. What up, Mace?
What's going on? We're comfortable here. It's a perfect day.
You were just at the clubhouse.
Just down the clubhouse.
Can you tell us a little bit? Tell us the vibe. It's obviously not a great moment for the Colorado Rockies, but today brings such a different energy. How was it in there?
Yeah, and I think that's a good way of putting it. I think everyone's happy to kind of get back home, and even though you're sitting there at 1-6, it is a little bit of a reset on the season. I mean, it's not necessarily the best opponent to take a reset against when you've got the Tampa Bay Rays coming in, but I think the general vibe is just excitement to kind of get back in familiar surroundings, you know, knowing Jones in particular, who's slumping 3-29 to start the season. You know, Coors Field opened a lot of things up for him last year and took him to the next level, and I think he's believing that that's going to happen again coming back home.
So, Mace, you are our senior Broncos rider, but maybe we should call you our senior Rockies rider as well. I know you're going to go to a fair amount of games this year. Talk to me about opening day, though, over the years, and maybe some memories that you have of opening day, because while today is about the baseball game, and I get it, they want to win, they need to get back on track, today is a lot more about the atmosphere, the vibes, and frankly, over the last 30 years, some good times. You think of EY Jr., Dante Bichette, Clint Barmas, Kyle Freeland. There's been some good opening day memories over the years.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Kyle Freeland. It's always, there's a kind of a little bit of the unexpected as well, and it can, I mean, I remember actually being here 6 years ago. It wasn't a good day for the Rockies, but coming out here when it was 24 degrees and there were snow flurries.
I was there. I remember that day, yeah.
Yes. I mean, you kind of, very endemic of kind of Coors Field itself, you kind of don't know what to expect, what you're going to get from an opening day. But I think the thing is, it's actually bigger than baseball. Like, what separates opening day here from most places is how it's almost like kind of a town celebration. I mean, spring officially began last month. It always feels like this is the first day of spring around here. And I think it's also testament to, in spite of the fact that this team has its struggles, which we've all well documented, baseball does have a pretty prominent place around here in terms of what it means to be in Denver, what it means to be in Colorado. I mean, for how many people who care about sports let a summer pass without going to a game? It's a tradition. And it's something that, despite the on-field struggles, has become kind of embedded in Denver as a city.
Have you seen anything? We're talking to Andrew Mason. I know it's been 6-7 games, right?
Yeah.
But bad, real bad of the 7. Is there a feeling that this team can turn it around, that the pitching staff can figure themselves out? Herman comes back, Sensatella returns at some point? Or is this just, hey, this is one of the worst rosters in baseball, and you're going to kind of get what you pay for?
I mean, I think organizationally, there's kind of that realism about it. And, you know, Marquez and Sensatella, they're on the 60-day IL. You won't see them for months, basically. The rotation kind of is what it is right now. You've had some there's been some promise in the bullpen. Even though Mears took the loss on Wednesday night, he's looked good. Victor Vodnik, who they picked up at the trade deadline last year, he's looked good. So there are glimmers here and there, but I think the way that that fans need to view this season is, okay, this is the most optimistic outcome, but look at where the Diamondbacks were 3 years ago, losing 110 plus games. There is some hope down on the farm. I'll say this, and this is unpopular to say, because you're like, oh, the Rockies don't have a plan. When they went so heavy into college pitching last year in the draft, and then at the deadline when they did deal, it was all single A, double A arms, mostly in the bullpen. You see a strategy here of trying to throw everything you can at trying to rebuild the pitching staff, but that's going to take a couple of years. This year kind of is what it is. In the clubhouse, they're going to do their job. That's the thing about baseball. Players, you know, you show up for work every day, you do your job. It's different than, say, football, for example, the vibe of it. But, yeah, they'll do their jobs, but organizationally, I think everyone kind of knows the score and knows what this year is.
So he brings up Mears and Vodnik. Those were the two guys I said, bullpen guys. I don't know their names. Mace knows their names. That's why you follow Mace. Mears and Vodnik. All right, we got to talk about the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
It is the elephant in the room. It is Chris Bryant and his massive, massive contract. Finally gets his first hits of the season in that final game at Wrigley Field. But, man, the vibes are just not high around Chris Bryant with his comments about not knowing the roster was this bad and then his 0-1 start to the season. Chris Bryant feels like kind of becoming a villain in Denver.
Yeah, and the weird thing is when he's actually played in the last couple of years, the Rockies aren't a great team, but they're not an abject team. I believe when he's in the lineup, if you prorate it over 162 games, they're about a 76-win team. He does, generally speaking, he does have a positive impact on the lineup. He's still, you know, despite the recent slump, he will get it going at some point. But, you know, you mentioned the contract. It's sort of like Russell Wilson. When we talk about these big numbers in Denver and the player doesn't deliver, fairly or unfairly, I think, there is kind of that villain to it. I don't think they're going to boo Chris Bryant today.
Just because I'm not there.
Yeah. No, you're right. Today's about the celebration. Yeah. I don't think they'll boo me.
But if we're coming back for the next homestand and Chris hasn't got it going by then, I think you'll hear some audible frustration from those who come out to the games.
Andrew Mason with us. We're hanging out here at El Patio. All right, I got to tell you this. We did something this week on the show. We said, we're done with the Rockies. We adopted the Atlanta Braves. That's your team. That's your squad.
That's the team I grew up cheering for, yeah.
So Stoke and I are now in line with you, rooting for the Atlanta Braves. Can you tell me what you kind of think of them? Because I know Acuna, obviously, because he's awesome and wears a bunch of chains, and I think that's cool. But what else are we looking at with the Braves? I got to get up to speed, Mace.
Okay, well, first things first, this lineup that they've got out there, most of it's around for the long haul because you've got Austin Riley, Ozzie Albies, of course, Ronald Acuna Jr., Sean Murphy catching is on the IL right now. Michael Harris, second. They're inked to long-term deal.
Okay.
So, you know, Matt Olson as well. So that core is going to be the core probably for the next few years. If I have a little bit of concern about the Braves, it's always the bullpen.
Right.
you could argue the bullpen is why they're 3-2 instead of 5-0 right now. But it's a fun. It is a fun team to watch. I mean, I'm not gonna try to talk you off the Atlanta Braves. Let's put it that way. And that's another place where, kind of like here, when this neighborhood is popping, Coors Field and Lodo is one of the top neighborhood environments in baseball. Like it's a true all day kind of experience. And that's what Atlanta's developed down there as well. So I mean, if you get down to a game or a series, and I'd say stay at a hotel near the park, kind of take it all in, make a weekend out of it. But yeah,
all right.
Why did you settle on the Braves, Josh?
That's I told him to pick a lovable
Everybody says
loser.
We're picking, it's too good of a team.
It's a you're front running right
yeah,
now. You know that.
The Pittsburgh Pirates or the Tigers.
But Mace, our decision between Stoke and I was, we've been doing this dance with the Rockies for so long. I wanted to feel what it feels like on the other side of that coin, and we came to the Atlanta Braves.
And it's weird to say this when they won a World Series 3 years ago, but my warning to you is they'll break your heart in October.
You know what?
My heart has been broken more times than I choose to remember and count over the years.
I'd rather take a broken heart in October than a black frozen heart in May. And that's what the Rockies have provided for me my entire life.
I get it. It's tough, and then you get... Here's like an example, like, and this is where I get the whole thing of, they don't have a direction. Like, you re-sign Charlie Blackmon. You know why? You know, if you're going young. Well, the one thing about this team, this organization here is, it's not that they don't spend. We talk about Chris Bryant. The Rays and Rockies offer an interesting contrast because the Rays don't have the revenue streams the Rockies do, right? But the Rays are successful. I mean, could you imagine if you had the Rays management and success here in Denver?
This place would be out of control.
The attendance would be like it was in the 90s again. I'm serious. This town so desperately wants to love the Rockies. And when you see it, like, on opening day here, it's like it renews all over again. Now, in a couple of weeks, we're going to be probably talking about a Wednesday game where there are, you know, where they're announcing a crowd of 19,000 and there are actually 8,000 people in the stands, you know. But this town wants to love the Rockies.
They do.
They really do.
Andrew Mason with us. Make sure you keep an eye at DenverSports.com. You'll be writing today about all things Colorado Rockies.
No Bo Nix chat? I thought you were going to.
We're out on time.
We had too much Rockies to get into.
We're going to get into. We're going to have you back on.
Yeah, you kind of piqued my interest with the Braves thing, picking them up. So
I'm going to be texting you about Braves takes now. Yeah. We'll get into that throughout the summer.
I'll have to share the always crazy thoughts of my mom who never misses a game.
Oh, perfect. Andrew, thanks for stopping by. We'll take a quick timeout. Do want to get back to some of that Broncos conversation with a mock that has them moving back, and we'll do that next.
We're live from the rooftop at El Patio Denver, across from Coors Field for our Rockies home opener party. Leading you up to first pitch, here's Stokely and Josh.
Yeah, I've been throwing down the whiskey.
Well, that's happening today for sure. A lot of folks are throwing down something here at El Patio, and you should be too. Come and join us. Come say hello. We're right across the street from Coors Field, and the party is rolling till 6 o'clock at minimum. We're here till 2 o'clock. Will Peterson, who's sitting in for Brandon Stokely, then Zach Bye and Philip Lindsay will take over at 2 and get you through the game at 6 o'clock. You can't make it, want to be a part of the show, we'd love to hear from you at 303-713-1043. That's the RamosLaw.com text line. And before we talk about this mock real quick, I got to read a text from a California number. See you out there. Where you said, Andrew Mason's going to cover some Rockies game for us.
A lot of Rockies games for us, yeah.
A texter writes, quote, Andrew's covering the Rockies games this season, end quote. Does that mean he came in last in the Fan Fantasy Football League?
Wow. Catching a stray. Hey, I know Mace pretty well. Mace loves baseball.
Yes, he does.
You know, 99% of this town knows Mace for his excellent Broncos coverage, right? He's one of the most popular, if not the most popular, Broncos beat writer. But I bet if you hung out with Mace, said baseball or football, he may lean baseball.
I think you're right.
He may lean baseball. He's a huge baseball guy. And I'm excited because he may be covering a historic season for all the wrong reasons. So, honestly, when a team gets so bad, you kind of have to cover them just like they're good because fans will get passionate. We know that, Josh.
They will. All right. Fans are certainly passionate about the Broncos and where they're at in this year's NFL draft with the 12th pick overall. And you and I, Will, have had a couple conversations about what we believe they should do, moving back, trying to find a quarterback and a tight end. I love that that's your theory. You can double dip and get a little greedy here. I want to go to CBS Sports. CBS has a mock where the Broncos do trade back, only to 15. They trade back with the Indianapolis Colts, but they add a third-round pick. So it's just three moves back, so you're probably not a big enough jump to request that second that the Broncos don't have. But then they take that 15th pick, and they add Bo Nix. Then you have the 82nd overall pick, so it gives them, I believe, 76 in the third and 82 in the third, where you're double-dipping there without having a second. Also gives you the chance, Will, hey, I fall in love with somebody that's in the second round, and I'm afraid, let's use those thirds to go up and get that spot. So of all the mocks that I've seen, this one is the one that makes the most sense to me. You're trading back just a few spots. You're adding one third-round pick. You're still landing Bo Nix, and that's at 15. You feel like, okay, we're halfway through the first round. You're kind of running out of first-round grade players. Anyway, address the quarterback position. I like this play a lot.
It's almost like the CBS Sports mockster was listening to you and I yesterday, because what did we say? We said Nix or Penix at 12 would feel like a reach, but Nix or Penix further back and adding draft capital, I think most fans would be cool with that. That's exactly what this mock draft does, and I like your idea too. Add that third so then you can package your two thirds to get in the second and hopefully get another quote-unquote premium player along with Bo Nix. Listen, I want them to go up. I have been clear about them wanting to go up, but I want them to go up or back. I think 12 is purgatory, Josh, because if you take Nix or Penix at 12, it feels like a reach. So either go all in, big trade to 4, or do something like this, move back, get Nix and another pick.
Yeah, it's a good play. I think this would be a smart play for the Denver Broncos. I've still yet to see a lot of mocks with MPJ, Michael Penix Jr., and he's climbing.
See, I'm going to have to get used to that. I'm like, wait, we're on Broncos. Why are we talking about MPJ? Yeah, Phil's calling him like the real MPJ and stuff. I'm like, what are we doing, Phil?
Wait, Michael Penix Jr.?
Yeah, because he's just taking shots at Michael Porter Jr.
Wait, Phil? He can't be. Michael Porter Jr. is ours already. He's the real.
It's the whole thing. You'll have to talk to him about
it. Okay, I'll talk to him about it today.
But when you say MPJ, it takes me a moment to realize you were talking about Michael Penix
Jr. You think other people call him that?
I don't know, but we already have, like, MPJ is so ingrained in our veins here in Denver that if they end up, put it this way, if Michael Penix Jr. ends up in orange and blue, it's going to be weird when people talk about MPJ. You're going to say, which one are you talking about?
Who gets the nickname first? Even though he's already had it. I guess it's based on play.
Dude with the ring.
Oh, okay. He does have a ring. Yeah. You're right.
I think Michael Porter Jr.'s got that one trademarked. Even though he didn't play great last year in the playoffs, he did enough. He went and hit the glass. Okay, we're getting off track. Michael Penix Jr.
Okay, Michael Penix Jr. So we hadn't seen anybody really in a mock put him inside of the first round. I've seen a couple where the Raiders take him at 13, and it always felt like a reach. And here we are now at the end of the week where Penix has had the biggest rise he's had since the national championship game when he got hurt and didn't look too great. Next week, I promise you, we're doing these mocks with six quarterbacks picked in the first round and probably, depending on where the Raiders go, like no later than 13. The Broncos trade back, let's use this instance, 15. Like, we're talking about six quarterbacks selected in round one, 1 through 15. Dang near half of them are QBs, Will.
Yeah, because the QB stock always goes up as the draft gets closer and closer. And how Raiders would it be to take Michael Penix Jr. at 13? I mean, that feels like such a Davis pick, Al Mark. You know, every year in the first round, the Raiders do something where the rest of the NFL is like, what in the world are the Raiders thinking? It would be so Raidery to take Penix at 13. And in fact, it wouldn't shock me. Everyone thinks Nix is the fifth QB off the board, right? Would not shock me in the least if Penix is the fifth QB off the board to the Raiders, because Raiders get a Raider, and then Nix ultimately ends up being the sixth quarterback selected somewhere in the teens, maybe early 20s.
Yeah, that's what I will see. That's what I can see happening with those quarterbacks. It's just such a different quarterback draft board, every other player draft board, and they manipulate those grades so much on the quarterback side. Because, look, man, I still feel this way, despite what Bo Nix has done climbing, what Michael Penix Jr. has done. I still don't know that I'm off this with J.J. McCarthy. In a world where it's about first-round grades getting selected in the first round, I'm not sure those three are there.
If I made you bet right now, when are all six gone? By what pick number on April 25th? All six are gone by pick blank.
22.
Okay.
What about you?
18.
Oh, wow. So even sooner.
Yeah, I'm with you, though. I think you're really onto something here. This theory that Michael Penix Jr. may have a second-round grade today. You just said he'll be a top 22 pick. I just said he'll be a top 18 pick. Yep. The big six will be gone by then, and then we'll have to see where everyone else falls, the Michael Bratz and the Spencer Rattlers of the world.
How you feeling about it, Broncos country? You want a quarterback at 12? You down with trading back? You want to get aggressive and trade up? Might mortgage the future with 25 and 26 draft picks. What would you do? 303-713-1043. That's the RamosLaw.com text line. All right, I want to talk about the Nuggets bench. Is it becoming a problem again for the Denver Nuggets? And if so, how big of a problem will that bench be come playoff time? That conversation's coming up next.
We're live from the rooftop at El Patio Denver, across from Coors Field for our Rockies home opener party. Leading you up to first pitch, here's Stokely and Josh.
Welcome back to it. We're live at El Patio. So, my man, hanging out until 2 o'clock. And then Zach, Phil, they'll take over. They'll take you home. They'll get you through the game, of course, as well. If you can't make it, hit us up on the text line. RamosLaw.com text line 303-713-1043. We're going to get into a Nuggets conversation here, Will, and based on the bench. The bench was bad again last night. They got outscored 34-9. It was 21-0 at halftime for the Los Angeles Clippers as far as bench scoring would go. And I know it's a situation where Jamal's not in, so he can't stagger. Sure. It changes everything, and it changes roles for guys like Christian Brown and guys like Reggie Jackson, who, the heck's going on there? That's another conversation we're going to have. Is it a big enough problem for you right now to be concerned in 15 days from now when we start the playoffs, or do we go, hey, we know the rotation shrink, we know the starters minutes go from 34 to 38 to actually 38 to 40, 42 in some instances, yep, depending on what the game will look like. So should I be worried or should I take a step back, breathe, and say the postseason will come and those problems won't be here?
Listen, I think you'd be a little naive not to worry because Bruce Brown's not here, Josh. They don't have that guy off the bench who can go give you 25 on any given night. And last night it was obviously really pronounced toward the end of the first quarter and the start of the second quarter when they just totally evaporated a 17-point lead. So, yes, you would be silly to be a Nuggets fan and just say, ah, everything's fine, nothing to see here. No, Christian Brown is the only bench guy who was here last year that was in the rotation that is now in the rotation this year. You're asking Peyton Watson to replace Jeff Green, which Jeff was a savvy bet. Yes, Peyton has a lot more upside. I get it. Peyton can fly through the roof. But I still think with Jeff Green, it was a veteran that you can rely on. Peyton Watson, these are the first minutes he's ever going to get in the playoffs that are real big boy minutes. And then Bruce Brown to Reggie Jackson. I like Reggie. Colorado kid, yeah, went to the Springs. He's clearly on his last legs of his NBA career. That's a major downgrade. And if anyone tries to spin it to you that it's not, they're lying. It's a major, major downgrade. So you make good points about, hey, Jokic's going to play 40 to 42 a night. Jamal's going to play, knock on wood, 40 to 42 a night. But those 6 to 8 minutes, they can cost you games. Because guess what? Those 6 to 8 minutes last night between the first and the second quarter cost you a game.
That's right.
You blew a 17-point lead.
Let's actually go to that second quarter, Kev, back there at the shop. Shout out to Kistner. Talking Michael Malone, who did get thrown out of the game, but he hinted on that and highlighted that as well. Will talking about that second quarter, the team playing well, fought hard, but the second quarter, it's number one there, Kev, that we want to hit, hurt them, and then they were never able to recover from that. Let's hear from Coach Malone postgame.
I think overall, I mean, I know in that second quarter, you know, that's when we kind of lost the game, if you will. But, you know, to give up 102 points, 38 from the field, 21 from three, I think the defense was outstanding tonight. But, you know, obviously there was that one stretch in the second quarter where the first 6-7 minutes where we dug ourselves, we allowed them to get back in the game. And then it was even throughout, back and forth, and we just weren't able to pull it out.
And you're exactly right. And Will, that's exactly what you were hinting at right there. That little stretch where that bench from the Clippers outscored the Nuggets by 13 to 0, got themselves back in the game. Never looked back. Denver would make a run. They'd cut it. They'd get Nikola rolling. They'd get AG getting a couple of buckets. But then they'd always answer and pull away. And then you go 102-100, and we talked about the Sombor shuffle from 30 feet that just didn't find the bottom of the net.
Yeah, it changed the whole vibe of the game, right? Remember, the Clippers didn't have Kawhi Leonard last night. So if you say are up 17 and then at halftime you're up 15, like even if the bench can just keep it where it is more or less, Clippers aren't coming out in the third quarter down 15 and making that a game. Those dudes are basically locked into the 4 or 5 seed. They know they're going to play Dallas in the first round. That's just the way it's going to be most likely. But instead, in a span of 6 minutes, you give them hope, and it changes the whole vibe of the night. We talked about it a little bit earlier. That was the key to the game. But, man, Josh, the fourth quarter last night was fascinating. So many layers to that fourth quarter between Michael Porter Jr. not getting a foul call. Is it Zubac? Am I saying that right?
Zubac.
Zubac landing in his airspace, and, oh, MPJ kicks his leg out. But he does it as an instinct. It's a reflex, like when the doctor hits your knee. He's just protecting himself from a bad landing. Malone gets ejected. Yes, they rally after Malone gets ejected, but then they make plays in the final minute where you really wish they had their head coach. You got Aaron Gordon not letting Jokic touch the ball and blow a tire. Then you got the Nuggets getting a stop and with 9 seconds left getting a rebound, but the inability to realize they needed to call timeout immediately cost them 4 seconds, and that led to a Nikola Jokic desperation heave at the buzzer, which I told you at 10:05. I thought it was going in. I did, but even Joker is human. And, yeah, you'll take 30-foot heaves from Joker for the win, but it never had to come down to that based on all these things we've talked about.
It certainly did not have to come down to that shot. It's also going back to the bench and Reggie Jackson. I don't know if it's Reggie putting a pressure on himself. Like, he's a vet, and he's too smart, and the team around him and the coaching staff is too smart to go, here's what Jamal did, you now have to provide that for us. And I don't know if Reggie's maybe putting that kind of pressure on himself. Or, I mean, go back to that Spurs game. He took one of the worst shots, maybe compared with a Russell Westbrook over the backboard shot we talked about earlier, trying to get up over Victor Wembanyama, and it was terrible. It seems like Reggie, he has put too much pressure on himself to fill the shoes of one Jamal Murray, even in this little seven-game stretch that we've seen. And that's just not his game. You don't have to be that. No one's asking you to be that or expecting you to be that.
Well, here's the thing. Reggie played 22 minutes last night, ultimately got benched for Christian Brown down the stretch, which I actually thought was a good decision by David Adelman. But Reggie Jackson entered this year trying to make the rotation. Remember, he was not in their playoff rotation last year.
No.
So at some point, we are being unfair to Reggie Jackson to treat him like he's still a starting point guard in this league, and he's playing his best basketball like he did in, I don't know, Oklahoma City 7 or 8 years ago. He's not 25 anymore. He's 33, going on 34. Reggie Jackson is a concern. But also, Reggie Jackson will look a lot better, Josh, when he's only playing 8 to 10 minutes a night. They're putting triple the number of minutes on his plate right now that he should be playing, which kind of goes back to the conversation we've had for 2 days now. Their back-to-back hopes rest on the health of Jamal Murray, not only because Jamal is that good, but because it takes a significant load off your backup point guard, who frankly is being asked to do too much right now.
You also think about that very well said, what he'll be playing in the postseason off of the bench. You're also not playing against the starting guards. Talent discrepancy, right? It's going to drop down a little bit, and it's not going to be such a mismatch for who Reggie's standing across from now as opposed to who we'll be standing across from come playoff time. So I don't want to be too worried about it because you're absolutely right. It shouldn't be a problem because Malone isn't going to give it enough time to turn into a problem.
How do you think the playoff rotation looks? Obviously, the five starters play, you know, the majority of the minutes.
Yeah.
But who's coming off the bench? Is it three guys? Is it four guys? What three or four guys is it? And how many minutes a night are they playing?
It is. There's two for sure. It's Reggie and Christian. 100%. Peyton's going to get opportunities. But that leash, I'm telling you, Will, that is going to be a short leash.
So would they go seven-man rotation or would they go Justin Holiday?
That's the key. They would go Justin Holiday because that's a guy that... Look, when they signed Justin Holiday, I thought, what the hell are they doing? This is a waste of a roster space and some money. He's been pleasantly good, a surprise, a guy that can shoot it when he's left wide open, is always going to make the right basketball decision, plays within himself. He doesn't try to do – Reggie will get ahead of himself a little bit and do that. He doesn't do any of that. And Malone trusts the heck out of him. So it's Reggie, it's Christian, and then it's a, hey, combo of who Malone's trusting more or who's playing some better defense, Justin Holiday, Peyton Watson. What about you?
Yeah, I agree with that, but the only pushback I'll give you, he's not afraid to go to seven if he has to. He went to seven
just
against the Lakers last year. Remember, Christian Brown got frozen out of the rotation in those two road games at the Crypto Center or Staples or whatever it's called. He's not afraid to go to seven. He'll go five starters, Reggie and Christian, if he really feels like he has to tighten it up that much. I don't think he wants to, but I don't think he's afraid to.
How you feeling about it, Nuggets fans? What's the bench rotation look like for you? 303-713-1043. That's the RamosLaw.com text line. The Avs got a win last night over the Wild, and by the end of this weekend, Avs fans, we could be sitting pretty if things go right. How can they go right, and what help do they need? We'll tell you coming up next.
We're live from the rooftop at El Patio Denver, across from Coors Field for our Rockies home opener party. Leading you up to first pitch, here's Stokely and Josh.
Will Peterson sitting in for Stoke today, plus yourselves. If you get down to El Patio Denver, we're right across the street from Coors Field, and we're going to be hanging out till 6 o'clock today. You still have that chance at a sweet, sweet prize. Come over and see our promo team. Blake's here. See Mario over there. Jordan running around. You got to scan, and then you're in the running. It's as simple as that. Show up, scan, wait for someone to tell you that you are the winner. You got to be live here at El Patio Denver to get involved. So come say hello, come kick it. And if you can't, 303-713-1043 on the RamosLaw.com text line. Real quick, Will, before we jump into some abs, starting to feel nice in here. Starting to fill up. I haven't seen anybody crying or puking yet, so we're all right.
This place has good opening day energy right now. I knew it was going to be popping. It certainly is. Just had some steak tacos that were good. I went a little heavy on the sauce. I don't know what was in the sauce, but my mouth is about 2,000 degrees right now. So you said no one's crying. Well, I'm about
He's
close.
About to be.
So I may be the first, but yes, there will be tears. There will be other stuff. Opening day traditions, yeah. Unlike any other. Yeah. We've done this. I mean, I've done this for 12 years now. You've done it a little longer. You see some stuff at opening day, man. I think it's wild, more wild than like St. Patrick's Day. I think it's I think it's the biggest party day of the year in Denver.
Okay, you might be right. You might be right on that. It does get crazy. So come down, get crazy, have fun, but you know, responsibly.
Yes, that's what we're asking for.
Don't punch anybody in the face. All right, let's get into this Avs conversation. As I mentioned, the weekend could end beautifully for the Colorado Avalanche. First and foremost, you got to take care of business tonight against the Edmonton Oilers. Much easier said than done. Then get a little bit of help, maybe from Chicago, which is scary to ask, but the Blackhawks are going to host the Dallas Stars on Saturday. It's the first of the back-to-back for Dallas, who will then come to Denver and play the Avalanche in their final regular season meeting. You handle business tonight against Edmonton. You get a little help from the Chicago Blackhawks tomorrow, and then on
Sunday.
Are we
counting on that?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's dangerous.
Connor Bedard, be our hero.
But hey, the Stars have won what, 8 in a row? That luck's got to run out at some point. Why not on an afternoon delight game in Chicago?
Bedard's going to need about 4 goals. But
yeah,
okay,
right.
Sure. Yeah.
But hey, this is the hypothetical.
Okay, so I'll let you finish.
We get to Sunday, Will, and the Colorado Avalanche have 104 points, and the Dallas Stars have 105 points. I believe that's the numbers. And then that game becomes, hey, winner is now the leader in the Central Division, and the Avs win that one. Obviously, there's where the beauty shows.
Okay, but let me ask you this. How much do you care about the Central Division? Because they went all in last year to win the division, exhausted themselves into late in the third period of Game 82, McKinnon's heroics in Nashville to get the division title. And what they do against Seattle, they look like a tired team.
Yeah.
They look like a team that had gone all in on getting this meaningless division title, and then they don't even get to defend their cup past round one, losing in a stunner in 7 to the Kraken. If it breaks that way, sure, I'll be happy. Of course I'll be happy. But, Dover, I'm not sitting here with the Colorado Avalanche checking the standings every moment like I am with the Nuggets. It just feels like two totally different situations, hockey and basketball. I just hope Avs fans know, this is my opinion, then I want yours.
Okay.
Don't panic if these last 6 games don't look great. They go 3-3, whatever. The bigger thing is getting Valeri Nichushkin back, getting your goaltending situation figured out. I really don't care about hanging a Central Division Champions banner. I'm looking to hang another Stanley Cup banner, and I'm not so sure it matters either way if they win this division. But I'd be curious to hear what you think, because obviously you've gone through the hypothetical of how they can win the division.
And look, I'm not end-all, be-all, end of the world. You got to have it or you're getting bounced in the first round. But I think it's a luxury, and I think it's something this Avs team. Home ice to me is not, like, if I were to rank the home court ice field advantages, hockey's last in my mind. And I think we talked a little bit about that. So it's important, because if they are able to beat Dallas, who, like I said, has won 8 games in a row, The Avalanche, when they got Val back and the trade deadline happened, and remember what they'd rattle off, 6-7 in a row.
Did they get to nine? I think they got 9 at one
point. I want that
Yeah,
feeling.
I'm looking now. They got to 9 with that win over Pittsburgh.
So, like, them firing on all cylinders, I think you can get that here. Getting Val back, which they will have tonight.
Do we know that 100% yet?
But, I mean, why would he make the trip?
It'd be weird to meet the team in Minnesota and then not play Edmonton. I'm with you.
Just hang out and maybe keeping tabs on them. I'm not trying to be funny, but, you know, that's the situation that they have. That's kind of what I'm looking for more than, hey, they won the Central. I want them to pass the eye test for me, and not that they're failing, but get back to that team that we saw post-trades and getting Val into the lineup.
Sure.
And I think getting a win over Dallas, you kind of springboard yourself getting into that lane.
And reintegrating Val is going to be huge. Unfortunately, it's the second time you are now reintegrating him back in the lineup. And I'm with you. It's more about how you're feeling, how you're playing, than who the opponent is or where you finish. If you lose the division by Dallas by a point, but we feel like they're playing good hockey, then whatever. We'll go play Winnipeg in round one. And if you somehow win the division, then okay. We'll go play Nashville in round one or whoever it ends up being. I don't think the Avalanche are scared. There's not a West team, even though Vegas lurks, I get it. and they did the long-term IR crap that they love to do. There's not a West team, Josh, that I go, oh, no, we're going to have to go through those guys. It's not one of those years where there's any team where you go, I don't know if they can get past them. Even Vegas, because guess what Vegas is going to do? A lot of cap gymnastics. Guess what? None of these guys have played together.
Yeah.
And they're going to be trying to develop chemistry in real time. You can catch Vegas this year. I don't think beating Vegas in a Western Conference final is out of the question by any stretch. So I'm not poo-pooing your point. I'm also not going to lose sleep over, and I'm not saying you are, but I know some Avs fans will. Yeah. I'm not going to lose sleep if they don't catch the Dallas Stars.
How do you feel about it, Avs fans? Let us know. Is it important for you to have the Avs at the top of the Central Division? Are you chasing matchups? What's your plan or best plan moving forward for these Avs? Text line, RamosLaw.com text line, 345 asks, Hart Trophy Showdown tonight. McKinnon and McDavid, who comes out on top? I want to add a question to that. The Drew actually asked us. If does Nathan McKinnon need to be the point leader, Art Ross Trophy winner, to get the Hart? Can you separate those two things? I'm way ahead of myself because I like Nathan McKinnon, and I got some action on it. I already think he locked it up. Has he not locked up the Hart right now?
Well, the oddsmakers would tell you he's locked it up. He's become a pretty overwhelming favorite. I think he has, because I think the voters realized that he was done wrong a few years ago when he got second. Who did he get second to, Drew? Taylor Hart?
Hall.
I'm thinking of the Hart Trophy. Hall.
Hall won the Hart.
But, like, is Taylor Hall on anyone's radar anymore? Not really. Dude has fallen off a cliff, and McKinnon has done it year after year after year. Don't forget, Josh, McKinnon didn't win the Conn Smythe Trophy.
Yeah.
He lost it to Cale Makar. Lost is a strong word, but you know what I'm saying. He got beaten out by Cale Makar.
I think Valanciunas was in second place anyway.
It feels like a legacy award at this point. I don't think he needs to win Art Ross or anything like that. Nathan McKinnon, unless something goes horribly wrong in these last six games, will win the Hart Trophy, just like Nikola Jokic will win the NBA MVP, and will be the first city in, 35 years to have two MVPs from the NBA and NHL at the same time. It'll be pretty darn special.
1988, 1989, Wayne and Magic, and we'll go 24.
That's pretty good company.
It's Nate and Nikola.
Wayne Gretzky and Magic Johnson.
Yeah.
Most famous hockey player of all time, and probably a top 10 most famous basketball player of all time.
You see, old Magic just made the billionaires list. He's a billionaire now.
Well, because he's making smart investments. I mean, if I had a stake in the Dodgers and the Commanders, I'd probably be a billionaire, too. Those things are just gaining value every day, right?
Well, what are you doing? Why don't you get some stake in that Dodgers?
I don't think they want my 0.00000001% investment that I could offer.
They might not want that. All right, how you feeling about it, Avs fans? You're worried? You're hunting a specific opponent when it comes to their first-round playoff matchup, or you just want to bring anybody in to battle? We're going to take a timeout. We're going to come back, get you ready for lunch. We're actually going to hear a little bit from Bo Nix. Bo Nix wants to play for Sean Payton. What are his reasons? He'll tell you next.